The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Your place.
57 degrees. It is open phones for this next segment or two here on the Bill Myers Show, 770-5633. All right, one question I posed earlier has been answered by a couple of people, because the Egg McMuffin meal in Ohio was $10 plus tax. So it was like $10.89. It's like 8% sales tax or something like that is what it ended up being. And I just could not believe the cost of an Egg McMuffin meal, all right? And Her Highness ends up telling me that it's about $7.50. My boss says it's closer to about $8. Maybe that's $8 with a large coffee. So one item a lot cheaper there, but still I couldn't believe it. Almost $11 for an Egg McMuffin meal. Dave's here. Dave, you're going to answer another question about, I'm just wondering, how is it that a big stinky bulldog ends up getting onto a United flight yesterday from Cleveland to San Francisco, is not having its service dog harness on, nothing like that, and then it throws up in the aisle, and we're all having to step over it. It kind of felt like flying today is turning into almost like a Greyhound bus in the skies here, Dave, except we don't have chickens in the luggage parts, above us yet. Maybe that comes a little bit later. I could be wrong. What do you think?
Well, there's a thing called a comfort dog, or for people that have high anxiety, and they can just be your regular pet.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they could bring a chicken on board.
Really?
I don't think the chicken's very much comfort, but like my cat is helps me with anxiety. Now, I haven't registered him. You're supposed to register him as a comfort animal or psychological animal.
Uh-huh.
They don't have to be trained.
So obviously this untrained bulldog that saunters up and then throws up his dog's meal into the aisle, that is not a trained dog. That is just you want to take your pet. You know,
you got to get a note from a doctor,
uh-huh,
saying that they're a psychological dog for your high anxiety. And, people that are afraid of flying that have to fly, a lot of them take their pets because it keeps them from going crazy on board a plane.
Yeah, I have a way to deal with something like this in my benevolent dictatorship, is that if you have that much anxiety before getting on a plane, get on a bus instead or drive.
That's my point.
Yeah.
That's my point. Now, I like flying, so I wouldn't need to take my cat. Because I leave her at home.
Of course you would.
I don't want to lose her.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for explaining. So that was obviously the therapy bulldog. I used to joke about the therapy ferret. I saw a guy with a therapy ferret one time, and I used to say, oh, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, this is America, therapy nation. Let me go to Bob. Hello, Bob. What's on your mind today?
Hey, good morning, Bill. Welcome back. I got
Thank
a light
you.
Anecdotal story. We can hit things heavier on Thursday.
Okay.
You said your dad was in the plastics industry as a salesman.
Yes, he was.
And it sparked a family memory that my dad was concluding his first tour, as a Marine and looking at the private industry. So that's the setup. He walks into the bedroom. My mom is on the bed crying her eyes out, just bawling. And he goes, What's going on? And he noticed his wallet on the bed, and she looked up at him with tears in her eyes and goes, "Who is polyurethane?"
Wait, is that a dad joke, or are you just having fun with me, huh?
No, honest to God, true story.
She thought, oh, that is funny.
He had a little note with polyurethane in the phone number.
Oh.
And she was snooping through his wallet, she probably shouldn't have done, and bawling her eyes out.
Thought your dad was cheating. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Great story.
All right, Bill.
Thanks for doing that, Bob. 770-5633. Let me go to Francine. Polyurethane, that cracks me up. How you doing this morning, Francine? Welcome.
Good morning, Bill. Yeah, polyester, all those horrible women.
Yeah, all of them. Horrible, horrible. Yeah.
So I wanted to, you mentioned you had a stop at the Denver airport. Did you have time to explore the the airport at all?
No, not really. It was about a 40-minute connecting flight, so it was really, you know, get on the people mover and get over there. Hey, but you never know who I ran into while I was in Denver. It was fascinating. The old former president of the Medford Chamber of, or, you know, the Jackson County Chamber of Commerce, Brad.
Really?
Yeah, Brad was there. It was just, we had a great talk there. It was finding out what he was up to, you know, over here. But anyway, sorry.
Well, the reason I ask is because you're aware of the reputation of the airport there, and the one that they rebuilt with all of the New World Order stuff and the murals. I had wondered if you'd had a chance to look at those murals.
No, I did not have a chance to look at that. But yes, many people have written me about all of the interesting symbolism there. And then wasn't there a talk that it was built on Native American ground? I guess that was another controversy about the time.
I can't remember that, but I know I've seen a lot of stuff about the underground, you know, beneath the airport, but all of the slab for the Freemasons, and then the murals are they're beautiful, but horrid in their, what they're pushing, you know, a lot of death and, when's the last time you looked at any of that?
It must have been years ago. You know, that kind of thing. Time I've ever gone to Denver, it's always been a very quick connection flight from wherever I was going. It was kind of like get through, get in, get out. You know, that kind of thing.
They probably know you're a talk show host, and they don't want you to bring it up on the radio.
Yeah, the main thing has the one thing that would just irritate me for the most part was going through the. In fact, more so than going through the airports was going through the airlines, whether it's Delta, whether it's United, and. You know, you go through all of their propaganda DEI posters that are going like, here, diversity, equity, and inclusion, and here, and make sure and introduce yourself to our non-qualified pilots who have the right box checking, though. Well, they don't say that in open, but it's kind of what I'm thinking, you know.
I know. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you survived without any pilots who didn't know how to fly.
They did know how to fly. In fact, one of the funniest things was that the United pilot coming out of Denver going to Cleveland, because it was such a delay because we had to fly south and then into New Mexico and then travel to get around the storms, right? And he says, "Well, we're going to fly this plane like we stole it," is what he said on the PA. And of course, I was on that thing that, you know, you can watch on the screen on the back of the seat in front of you, and you can actually watch how fast you're going. It's like the sky map or whatever it is, and it shows where your plane is in the sky and what your altitude is. And he flew it at just under 550 miles an hour, which is pretty darn close to the top speed of what those planes can do. And normally they were loping at about 500. So we flew fast. We liked it. So that was good.
I haven't flown for probably 40 years, and I don't intend to ever fly again.
Yeah, I have to say it was probably better 30, 40 years ago. But, you know, sometimes there's just no way of getting around the flying, okay? Thanks for the call, Francine. 721. Let me go to the next. And good morning. Hi, who's this? Welcome. Hello.
Good morning, Dave. Michael Shaw, welcome back.
Hey, Michael. Great to hear from you. Where are you right now? Are you in town or are you in your northwest bunker?
Well, I'm up north at the moment. I'm not headed down there in the next few weeks. We got to get back down to do some stuff soon. But I wanted to address two things on the ambulance board issue. First off, Dave is incorrect.
What?
A comfort animal is not a service dog, okay? If you look at the federal laws, a service animal must be addressing a disability, like a blind person or something. So a comfort animal is not the same as a registered service dog.
Which makes sense, yes.
Okay. So, number two is airlines over the last 2-3 decades have gotten really bad at handling animals in the cargo area. Multiple thousands of cases of animals dying or getting out or never being found again. And that's why you get pet owners who want their dog, like this bulldog, on the plane with them instead of in cargo.
Okay. Now, the question is, though, that when I see a dog get on the plane, who is an untrained dog necessarily, and does not have a diaper on of any sort, and the flight's going to be for 5.5 hours. You know, it's going to be a 5 hour and 45 minute flight. I know that I'm going to get up and go to the bathroom probably at least twice during that almost 6 hours, right? So how do you get a dog onto a plane with no diaper, no cage, no nothing? How do you even handle something like that? It just doesn't make sense to me. Can I help me understand?
Sure. Well, we've got three standard poodles, and our poodles will hold their pee for 12 to 14 hours if need be.
Really?
So, a 6 hour flight is nothing. So, you know, it's very, very easy to do if your dog is used to doing it in a normal home setting as well.
Okay.
So you limit the fluid intake to start with. There are pee spots at the airport to take your dog to the pee spot before you board. And a dog is fine for 6 hours. There's no issue there. They don't have to go that often as you and I do.
Okay, all right. Well, I didn't realize that that was part of the process. You see, I learn something every day here, Michael. Thank you for that.
No, the last part of it is that if I took my dogs on a plane, I would buy extra seats to have the room for them.
Of course you would. And then I wouldn't mind that at all. I think that's a great way of doing it. Of course, I don't know if I want to share the seat next time, if I'm the next part, you know, passenger in that seat.
If an aisle is three seats wide and we got me, my wife, and I an extra empty seat, you know, it's all covered because we got three of us in a row, the dog, her, and I.
Got it. All right. Thank you for the experience and sharing that. 725.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros and Full Service Auto Repair.
If you have a painting project this fall, you're going to want to buy your Benjamin Moore paint at Drake's Paint during their 40th anniversary sale. Benjamin Moore's top-of-the-line Aura interior and exterior paint is 30% off at Drake's now through Monday, September 9th. So come see your only locally-owned paint dealer and authorized Benjamin Moore retailer, Drake's Paint, and save 30% on Benjamin Moore's best Aura paint through September 9th. Drake's Paint in Grants Pass, North Medford, and now in South Medford.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer. Always appreciate you listening, no matter the time. Live 6 to 9 weekdays on 106.3 KMED and 99.3 KBXG. I'm here for you. But life has a way of getting busy. So if you miss a show and you want to catch up, or you just have a different schedule, well, that's what my podcasts are for. The last 3 months or so of my shows available for free download and sharing on KMED.com or BillMeyerShow.com. Podcasts are sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They're helping keep you current. Find out about their services on ClouserDrilling.com.
And nothing but. This is the Sean Hannity Morning Minute.
The same people that promised you keep your doctor, you keep your plan, and you save on average $2,500 a year per family. Millions and millions of Americans lost their doctors, lost their plans. That's government promises. Guaranteed government job and guaranteed government child care, guaranteed government college, guaranteed government retirement, guaranteed government healthy food. How does it work out? Always ends up the same way. Unfulfilled promises and more poverty. And as a result, then you have to calculate how much of your freedoms you gave up in the name of false security. That's the left. And they've become more radicalized. You see it now in Europe, and you see Europe becoming, you know, with under Harris of walls. That is their vision for America.
Keeping you on the straight path. Later today, it's the Sean Hannity Show.
Hey, at Blinds.com, they have their Labor Day mega sale. It is here, Blinds.com. Now at Blinds.com, they make upgrading your home simple, easy, affordable, and there's no better time to score some of the best deals of the season. Now, Blinds.com is the better way to shop for custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, they have award-winning design experts. They'll give you free virtual consultations on your schedule. They can even send samples right to your door. Now, you can do the measuring and installation yourself or let Blinds.com handle all of it. They install unlimited window treatments for one low, low cost. And at Blinds.com, they have covered over 25 million windows, all backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. To make upgrading your window treatments non-labor intensive with Blinds.com and their Labor Day mega sale happening right now For a limited time, save up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Plus, score premium doorbusters up to 50% off right now at Blinds.com.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hi, this is Dwayne Barkley, owner at American Rentier Garage, a full-service auto repair shop. We get numerous questions that begin with, hey, do you work on? So to put it simply, if it's between your license plates, we probably work on that. Call, stop by, or text us through our website at AmericanRentier.com. Stop by Biddle Road, right across the street from Elmer's, or call us at 541-499-6673. American Rentier Garage, we are united through service.
This is News Talk 106.3 KMED, and you're waking up with the Bill Myers Show.
And we'll touch on some emails of the day. Emails of the day are sponsored by Dr. Steve Nelson, Central Point Family Dentistry, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. By the way, if you are in need of maybe some specialized toothpaste, mouthwash, toothbrushes, water picks, things like that to help you obtain dental health. Okay, same. It rhymes, right? Mental, dental, yeah, kind of thing. But anyway, they have a little kiosk that is filled with these kind of helpers, and they'll sell them to you at Central Point Family Dentistry at their cost. Very good stuff there. CentralPointFamilyDentistry.com, right next to the Mazatlan Mexican Restaurant, and it's on Freeman Way in Central Point, okay? And Jan writes me about the bulldog. I was wondering about the bulldog throwing up on the United flight from Cleveland to San Francisco yesterday. And I'm just thinking, you know, what does this say about a country in which it just strikes me as so third worldish that we're getting to this point where somehow, you know, the dogs are going to be sharing with us and the therapy chickens and the therapy ferrets and all the rest of it. It's just sort of stuff that just makes me cringe, okay? And Jan says about the bulldogs here, Bill, it could be because the bulldog types with the smooshed-in faces have died in transit because of breathing problems. Believe that there have been lawsuits, yeah. So it's always about the lawsuits, huh, Jan? That makes sense. That seems like a reasonable assumption there. We have Tom writing in this morning, Bill. Woke points. In a phone conversation recently, a 90-year-old disabled woman in Wisconsin insisted that if Trump is elected, he plans to take away her Social Security check. Martin Armstrong says Socrates says that Kamala's actual support is 10%, not 50%. And give the Democrats their due. They have created by far the largest cheat machine in history. I'll agree with you on that. Thank you so much. Thanks for writing, Tom. Bob Hayworth writes this morning about air travel. Bill, during my years of flying commercial from gig to gig, of course, you know him. He's with the Kingston Trio. I developed a meme that suggested that flight attendants should add to their pre-flight announcement, mothers traveling with small children must stow their children in the overhead compartment. Oh, man. Question now, then, is how did you provide a daily weather report for KMED? I'm glad you asked about that, Bob. Bob, this is one of those things where I'll share with you a little bit of behind the scenes baseball. I took my laptop with me. I also took a audio interface with a microphone and a set of headphones. I took my laptop with me with audio editing software. And what I did every day over the weekend was that I checked the weather forecast and put together a quick weather forecast, and I uploaded it into the system, into the computer brain system of the radio station that ends up delivering the weather forecast. That's how you had a current weather forecast while I was gone. That was it. So now you know. Even while I was over there, even while I'm in Sandusky, Ohio, in the Quality Inn, which was not a particularly quality motel, but that's why I got it cheap. I didn't care, it's just me. But, that's how I did it. That's how I did it. But they did have free Wi-Fi. Thank you very much. Yeah, the Quality Inn in Sandusky that I stayed at was one of those older ones that had been gotten a little bit tired over the years. But it was still okay, and it was, reasonably clean. But it was one of those kind of motels. Everyone's been one. You've seen them in which it's been around long enough that the cheap laminate floor that they put in 1982 is now starting to get loose, you know, kind of bow everywhere with the humidity. That kind of thing. But you know what's really weird? Down the street from the Quality Inn. Quality Inn is by the Ohio Turnpike. There they have toll roads. Ohio Turnpike is the toll road in the state. And so it's like you pay about $3 to drive from Cleveland to the Milan exit, about 50, 60 miles away, you know, that kind of thing. It pays for the road, and the road's always in good shape, you know, that kind of thing. So I guess there's a good side to that particular toll road, if you want to call it that. Same in Pennsylvania toll roads for that. I actually had to pay cash, though. Everybody else, I guess they have their easy passes like they do in the big urban hive minds. But anyway, that worked out really well. But also right next to the Quality Inn, I know I'm kind of going far afield here, was, you know how I was telling you how everything up and down that highway was just chain, chain, chain? No mom and pops anymore, practically everything destroyed, and it's all, 40 Chipotles, you know, 15 Starbucks, 12 McDonald's, and, you know, everything looks like everywhere else. You know, that's just it. That's the part, and it was way over the top. I know we have chains here in Southern Oregon, nothing like the way that they have just gone all chain. I'm surprised that there weren't three Home Depots and three Lowe's, you know, on top of that. Although they had them too. But there was, just down the road from the hotel, was an old restaurant that my father used to go get plowed at all the time. It was called the Homestead Inn. It was a Homestead Inn. It was Homestead Farms. All the farm fields around that area were owned by the Homestead Farms at one point. Just a beautiful old Victorian house. It was a huge Victorian house, Victorian mansion, that I would estimate probably 5,000 square feet. And it had a restaurant in the top, and it had a bar in the basement called the Rathskeller. And in the 1970s, my father would go there with his friends and customers, and he would just go get plowed. That was the day of the three martini lunch in those days. Well, apparently, the competition from the chains put it out of business. And so that old Victorian home had been abandoned. It's just been derelict now for a number of years. I want to say it looked like it was about 15, 20 years. And I went and took some pictures of it. I'm going to have to share it on Facebook. This grand, beautiful Victorian house. Like, not all that different from the one they made the B&B of in Jacksonville. I forget the name of that one in Jacksonville. Very nice place. But this place was just falling into disrepair. The ivy had grown all over it, and it was open now into the basement, and you could see it. I went up to it, and I was taking some pictures of it because it was like looking at these, these urban. There are like YouTube channels now in which people go into old abandoned homes and things like that. But it was like that. And I was thinking, oh, my gosh, the wonderful meals that we had there for all those years. And the ivy's not climbing over it. And some of the windows are broken now. And there's no way. I don't think anybody could really restore it at that point. Well, you can restore anything if you have enough money. But I don't think they're going to restore that particular one. But that one kind of tugged at my heart because I remember going there, you know, quite a bit when I was a kid. And of course, my father drinking way too much. My father was a happy drunk. Sometimes I think back to his behavior in the early 70s. I don't know how he made it home sometimes, but that was different. And if you're old enough, you can remember back when there was a little more of a, the police officer will take you home rather than throwing you into jail and, you know, wrapping you up in the criminal justice system, which they do right now. But, you know, it was a different time, different culture. Of course, in those days, there was even 3-2 beer. As an 18-year-old, you can drink 3.2% low-alcohol beer. And that went away once the federal government decided to say, all right, if you want federal highway grants, no 3-2 beer for you 18-year-olds. So that's where we go. So a little bit of inside. There we go. 7:37. Herman's going to join me in a few minutes, and we're going to talk about the fire map. We want to get more into that. This is KMED and KBXG. Have your taxes gotten off track? Just call Zach, CPA at First Response Resolution. Visit firstresponseirs.com today to see what Zach can do for you. First Response Resolution in Eagle Point is your first response to the IRS, defending your rights as a taxpayer.
Access your stored items safe and secure. Storage at Exit 24 has all sizes of units with traditional outdoor access that are brightly lit with wide paved drives. Affordable RV and boat parking is available too. Conveniently located off I-5. Storage at exit24.com.
Hi, this is Bill Meyer, and I'm with Charisse from No Wires Now, your Dish Premier local retailer. It's time to switch to Dish.
If you have DirecTV or cable TV, call me today to see how I can save you money. Plus, I'll lower your internet and cell phone bills.
And those offers in the mail from Dish, you can go through No Wires Now for those.
Call me at 541-680-5875.
Call Charisse like I did or visit their showroom off Biddle Road in Medford. NoWiresNow.com. Restrictions apply. Call for details. Internet and cell phone service not provided by Dish.
James Taylor released the single Fire and Rain in August of 1970, and it quickly reached number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100. This song is a reminder that summer heat and winter moisture can make the ground under your house foundation unstable. With Millette Construction, you've got a friend that can level your house and fix the water issue that caused the damage. Get on solid ground. Millette Construction is your foundation handyman. Visit MilletteConstruction.com. CCB number 32787.
News is sponsored by Millette Construction, specializing in foundation repair and replacement. Get on solid ground by visiting MilletteConstruction.com.
From the KMED News Center, here's what's going on. A new fire is burning in southern Oregon in Klamath County. The Copperfield Fire has burned more than 3,200 acres just outside of Chiloquin. Growing and gusty winds. Governor Tina Kotek declared it a conflagration, clearing the way for the Oregon State Fire Marshal to mobilize incident management teams and 8 task forces. The cause is yet to be determined. 3 people are dead after a small plane crashed into a townhouse in a Portland suburb. Authorities believe 2 people were on board the twin-engine Cessna that went down in the Fairview area Saturday morning. In addition to the pilot and a passenger on the plane, 1 resident of the townhouse was killed in the crash. A medical helicopter called to the scene of a fatal crash on I-5 Friday couldn't respond because of interference from a civilian drone flying over the crash. The accident killed Dustin Brown of Sweet Home. First responders were able to take 2 passengers to a hospital by ground instead. Bill London, KMED News.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street in Phoenix.
This is Insurance Agent A.
Hey.
He sells for one company only.
It's the absolute best.
To my right, an exemplary insurance agent, an independent, which means...
I can help you research multiple insurance plans, giving you a much better look at who actually has the better coverage.
Well, that's not fair.
That's not what our customers say.
Oh, I can't compete with that.
Home, auto, health, life. Sky Park Insurance is your local independent agency that shops for the best coverage for less. Steve makes insurance easy.
All aboard.
The Oregon Coast Scenic Railroad is your opportunity to ride behind the living history of a historic locomotive engine along the beautiful Oregon coast. Book either the coastal excursion for the whole family or take that special someone on the romantic moonlight excursion that includes appetizers and refreshments. Secure your seats with the Oregon Coast Scenic Railroad now at OregonCoastScenic.org.
If you have a painting project this fall, you're going to want to buy your Benjamin Moore paint at Drake's Paint during their 40th anniversary sale. Benjamin Moore's top-of-the-line Aura interior and exterior paint is 30% off at Drake's now through Monday, September 9th. So come see your only locally owned paint dealer and authorized Benjamin Moore retailer, Drake's Paint, and save 30% on Benjamin Moore's best Aura paint through September 9th. Drake's Paint in Grants Pass, North Medford, and now in South Medford.
Hi, I'm Steven with Steven Westfall Roofing Inc., and I'm on KMED.
19 before 8, Josephine County Commissioner Herman Bertschinger joins me every Tuesday. We kind of shoot the breeze on politics. You know, the part that, after talking with Curtis Hauck last hour here, Herman, is the part I'm wondering is that what part of it that people don't understand that essentially we have the intelligence agencies in bed with the mainstream media directing the election, the presidential election. Would you agree with me on that overall, just given the fact that there is such a tight tie between intelligence agencies and television network news these days? Seriously?
Well, yeah, we have that. But what I think is more disturbing is how gullible Americans are watching these news networks. I mean, look at and how short their memory is. Kamala Harris If you go back to the last election, she called Biden every dirty thing under the sun, and then her ratings were in negative. I mean, she just fell off the world.
That's right.
Then she becomes vice president. You don't name one thing she has done in the last 3.5 years as a vice president. Nothing. They never nothing. And then all of a sudden they tear Biden down and they bring Harris up, and she's actually doing pretty good in the polls. I am just like sitting in my chair going, Americans don't have a clue. They are not paying attention.
But I honestly believe, and I know it's not Conspiracy Theory Thursday, but it is well known that the intelligence agencies absolutely hate, despise former President Trump. Absolutely no doubt about this, right? And you know that, and then you realize that that there are intelligence agents throughout, festooned throughout the news, the national news media, well known, and people have been willing to talk about it after they ended up leaving the media. Essentially, this is an intelligence agency run war. That it's an information war that they're waging on the American people through the.
Well, the intelligence agency is going to want somebody they can manipulate, mm-hmm. and this goes clear back to J. Edgar Hoover. Come on, Bill. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been going on for a long time.
Well, they're more in the. I just think they're more in the open about it these days. Much more willing.
Well, everything's more in the open about these things. God, wow. Have you listened to the interview with Giuliani and Dr. Phil?
No, I have not.
You need to do that. I think it's on YouTube. It's pretty extensive. You know, one thing about Giuliani, I got to take my hat off. The guy's got guts because he just don't care. You know, he said, you know, everybody's been trying to kill me for 30 years, the mob on the Russians and everything. He says, I don't care anymore. And he just lays it out.
Yeah, is this something which came out recently? Because I didn't watch a lot of media over the weekend while I was gone.
Yeah, I don't know. It hasn't been out too long, but it's a very interesting interaction. And Judy, you know, Giuliani's got a pretty good record. If you go back to him being a prosecuting attorney, you know, he went after probably the biggest mob, the heads of the mob. And, I mean, he did some pretty remarkable things.
But the system has pretty much destroyed him over the election rigging charges and things like that. He really went to the mat over Trump and has essentially been destroyed because of it all.
But he's not stopping. He's continuing on. But anyways, back to the original tone of the conversation.
Yeah.
Come on, Americans, wake up. Quit drinking the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Well, every day the Kool-Aid's flowing freely. That is for sure here. So, all right, we're going to shift to what I was going to talk with you about here of local import, because one of the biggest gaslighting situations that we're having done to the people in the state of Oregon has to do with the wildfire risk map and via the ODF. And this was something that the state legislature imposed upon the people here. And I think people forget that, or they tend to think of that this is just something that just happened to come out of Oregon State University, the Oregon Department of Forestry, et cetera, et cetera. We have to place the blame where it belongs. First off, this was legislative action that brought us here in the first place. But what are you thinking about the latest activity from the last few weeks?
Well, let's remind our listeners that the person that carried this in the Senate was Senator Golden of Jackson County.
Yep.
And the person that carried it in the House was Representative Pam Marsh, Ashland. So let's start there, okay?
Yep.
Thank you very much for putting this smelly object on our doorstep, okay? Because they're the two that did it. Second thing is, let's rewind the clock back to 2019 when I was still in the Senate. And I had Greg Miller from Weyerhaeuser and Heath Curtis from Hampton Timber, two of the largest landowners in the state of Oregon, come in my office and tell me and hand me a letter that they've entered into a memorandum of understanding with the governor. And what that was to change the Forest Practices Act and create new setbacks and all these new things that the environmental community wanted. After very loud conversation, I told them they can exit two ways, through the door or out the window. Mm-hmm. I didn't care.
Okay.
So anyway, so that's very important, all right? Because what did they get in exchange for that, Bill? What did they get in exchange? Okay.
In other words, they caved to the environmentalist demands, but in order to do this, did they cave to we end up paying to fight their fires?
Well, it wasn't on the letter, but they had to get something. So it was all the things that's not written. Always remember that the large landowners pay the highest large fire costs, okay? There's yeah. The current formula is they pay, then we have an insurance policy with Lloyd London's was paid out of general fund, and then after that, the general fund. So the two biggest payers are the large fire, the large landowners and the general fund pay for large fire costs. Now, 4 years later, almost 4 years later, we're conceiving this map. What is this map for? What does it tell us that we don't already know? Okay. Well, what it does, over the last 10 years, there's been an argument constantly with ODF and landowners about what should be in ODF protected lands and what should be out. And one of the biggest arguments is on the east side with the sagebrush, because those ranchers that own those huge ranches say, I can't, you know, I got 10,000 acres. I can't pay $2 an acre assessment. That land doesn't even make me $2 an acre.
And so, and you can understand them saying that. That makes financial sense. Sure.
Right. So there's this big argument that's been going on. Same with the wheat growers up in Pendleton. They can't pay an assessment for those tens of thousands and thousands of acres. There's just not enough money in it. Well, now by creating this map, you're in. You're in the map.
In other words, the whole fire map, the wildfire mapping, Senate Bill 762 that Goldman Marsh carried, sponsored, and brought in there, is really about socializing wildfire big landowners' costs. Is that kind of what you're presuming here or alluding to?
Yes, you're gonna see over time, they're going to create assessment for everybody that lives in these extreme or high or moderate. They're going to probably create some kind of tier assessment. They're also going, so that accomplishes goal number one, financing large fire costs. Mm-hmm. Goal number two it accomplishes by putting restrictions on development in those areas, or making it very difficult to develop, or making it very expensive because the type of construction materials you have to use. It also accomplishes the goal of 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and that is limiting development in rural Oregon.
All right. What I'm hearing so far, and you know, diving down the rabbit hole here, is something we've talked about before, that essentially Senate Bill 762 is a rural land de-development and depopulation scheme.
It meets those goals. It won't totally depopulate, but it meets the goals to make it tougher, okay?
Okay.
So it won't increase. Now, last week we had a meeting with Oregon Associated Oregon Counties, put it on, and we had Oregon State University guru there and Oregon Department of Forestry. And so it was all the county commissioners got to weigh in. And I heard this young man talk about modeling this, modeling that,
yeah.
You know, and he was defending the methodology of creating the map. And he was a young guy, Gen Z guy, okay? And so when it was my turn to ask, and, you know, as a wildland fire science instructor, and I've done this for about 40 years, but my first question to him, how many fires have you ever been on? Zero. He has absolutely no wildland fire experience.
Yeah.
So he got Gen Z sitting behind a computer doing all kinds of modeling, And modeling, you know, whether you use BEHAVE or all the different programs for the spread of wildland fire over the landscape, those computer modeling is you put in certain things, you put in fuel types, you put in weather, you put in fuel moisture. There's all kinds of ingredients you put into the model. You push the button, and the computer spits out what it thinks will happen. That's great, but as a wildland fire behaviorist will do, is they'll do the modeling, then they'll go out, get in a pickup, and go look at the fire, and does the modeling match what the fire is doing?
And I would venture a guess that the modeling that the Gen Z folks were using from Oregon State University doesn't necessarily match real-world results, but we're supposed to completely do everything or turn fire policy upside down using modeling, right?
Well, what they're doing, it's impossible to do what they're doing because the fire is dynamic. So if I have a 2-mile-an-hour wind pushing a fire through whatever fuel types or whatever, mm-hmm. and then I plug in a 20-mile-an-hour wind pushing fire through there, you're going to have two different results that are way different. So I don't know if they're doing worst-case scenario. I don't know what they're doing on their fuel modeling.
Well, what concerns me, though, about the modeling, though, being used as the major part of designing this, Herman, is that we know how politically oriented climate modeling got. With everything about changing policy regarding climate, because they can't prove it, but they sit there and point, well, our computer models say this, that kind of thing about CO2, right?
I'm glad you brought that up, because one thing that really tripped my trigger, when you teach fire and how it moves across the landscape, there's three drivers. One is weather, mm-hmm. and weather is the most dynamic, can change the fastest. The other is topography. Topography you can't change. Topography is topography. And then the third is fuel. And it depends on the type of fuels and how dry they are. So you got climate, topography, and fuels. I looked at the slide. The slide pops up on the screen, and they go, our new modeling is climate, weather, topography, and fuels. They added climate to the wildland fire triangle. I could not believe it. It just blew me away.
Yeah, but why would you add climate to it, though? Climate,
because that's a politically thing to add.
Oh.
It has nothing to do about fire. Mm-hmm. It has to do about politically charged words. So I just lost it, and the guy from Oregon Associated County tried to shut me down a couple of times. I wouldn't let him. And I just kind of went after him. I go, and the methodology, this is such a scam. The methodology is wrong because it's not verified, pure and simple. So now the next shoe to drop, they're going to get their map through. They're going to make a couple adjustments. I mean, irrigated farmland. The guy says, well, irrigated farmland is susceptible to fire brands up to 1.5 miles. So even if you're irrigated farmland, and you're 1.5 miles from the forest, you could have these firebrands. And I just lit him up. I said, so what? I said, there's two sides to the equation of firebrands. You have to have receptors. If you don't have receptors.
Yeah, just because a firebrand comes down. And now firebrands, those are like sparks, right? Or sparks are burning,
burning
material. If burning material falls on a bunch of green irrigated land, it's not going to burn.
Yes, there's no receptors. And I said, so I said, your methodology, again, is wrong because you left out the other part of the equation. So you have to have receptors, and then you base those receptors on probability of ignition. So anyways, I was just appalled. So here I got this young, early 20s Gen Z computer nerd telling me how a fire is going to move across the landscape, and he has absolutely zero experience in the wildland fire.
More importantly is that he doesn't have proof that the model matches real-life results.
Nope. So this is just a scam, and people in rural Oregon are going to pay for it. Now, here's the next shoe.
Okay, you say people in rural Oregon are going to pay for it. I got to tell you, though, I think that there's we're at pitchforks and torches kind of time, you know, with this kind of conversation coming out of Senate Bill 762. This needs to be repealed. It has to be repealed. In fact, the legislature should be set on fire politically that they did this in the first place here, Herman. Where am I wrong on this?
Oh, they you know, when this was going on, I was fresh out of the Senate. So I was making phone calls to senators, especially like Bill Hansel. And I said, Bill, this is going to devastate your wheat farmers in your district. And he still voted for it. You know, Republicans voted for this thing.
I know.
I tell you, I'll tell you what, under the Tim Knope leadership, we gave the farm away. We really did. I just, that simple, Bill.
I know that it couldn't be repealed. Senate Bill 762 could not be repealed without at least a couple years' work, you know, to do this, to have the people go against this. But
you have to do it through the initiative process.
Yeah, and that's not always a dead bang winner on something like this too. But this is hot. This is in essence is a fire tyranny imposed by the state legislature. Do you believe that there is enough political juice in the current situation up there to repeal this in the legislative session?
No, absolutely, absolutely not.
And why not? Why would not even reasonable liberals out of Portland just realize that destroying the activity out in these rural lands is not going to stop the wildfire?
Because it doesn't affect people in the urban areas. This bill does nothing to stop wildfire. Remember our old discussion, as long as you have forests, you're going to have fires. Okay, that's just how it goes. This does nothing. But now the most important thing, Bill, that you need to know, insurance, okay? So right now, currently, all the insurance companies have to compete against each other for homeowners, you know, selling homeowners insurance. They got to have agents. Agents have to have offices. That's another cost. They're all competing. So what they're going to do is they're going to withdraw from the market. They're going to say, and people are going to say, oh, we can't get insurance. We can't get insurance. And the banks say you got to have insurance. You can't get insurance. So then the legislature is going to create a pool. Okay, and they're going to tell the insurance companies, you're all in the pool. So now they think about this. Now all the insurance companies all are in this pool. They share the burden equally, all the insurance companies. And the legislature is going to set the price, which is going to be a lot higher than you're paying now. And the insurance companies no longer need the agents, no longer have all those costs because they're all in the pool. We're all in the pool. Oh, you can't get insurance? Just go to the pool. The pool is three times the expense. This is exactly what they've done in California. The insurance companies have less liability and less expense by being joined at the hip in the pool. Oh, the legislature is going to save you. We're going to make sure we're going to force those dirty, rotten insurance companies to participate in the pool. So you can have insurance no matter what. That's the next shoe to drop.
All right. That's the next shoe to drop from their plan. How is it best combated at this point besides just, you know, destroying Salem as a political activity zone? I don't know.
So only the initiative process, because I don't think there's enough senators and Republicans that are affected by this bill population wise. To be able to do anything in the legislature.
Okay. Herman, I appreciate the call, and I don't, I'm not real happy about this. We'll grab a couple of calls before you take off, okay? Let me go to, by the way, this is KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass, 8 o'clock. We'll extend here enough time to take a couple of calls with Herman. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
This is Janie.
Sani?
And my, Janie, yeah.
Janie, okay, yeah, Janie. You're with Herman Bearchicker.
My dad was a rancher, and up to 1960, we had no forest fires in Oregon because the cattle ranchers paid X amount of dollars per head to put the cattle in the woods every year. And in 1960, somebody had a brilliant idea to take the cattle out of the woods.
Yeah, Janie, let me ask Herman about this since I'm short on time. Is the new moo part of this problem too here, the new moo on the lands here, Herman? What would you say to Janie's claim there?
All of that helps because, especially cattle reduce flashy fuels. Flashy fuels are the ones that dry out the first, and they're the ones that catch fire, and then they heat the other fuels to the point where where they can become ignited and so on and so on. So that all helps. It all helps. But there was forest fires before 1960. I mean, I keep pointing to the Tillamook fires or the fires of 1910. So we've had big fires forever, but all of that helps, though, Bill.
All right. Janie, thanks for the call. Let me go to next line. You're with good morning. You're with Herman Berchiger. Who's this?
This is Ed, Bill.
Ed, go ahead.
Well, I heard it mentioned at one point, but I feel the people need to understand the basic foundation of all of this was the landscape scale. And to get a concept of it, they are telling you that they have to burn across jurisdiction, across authorities, across property ownership.
Right. That is part of this. That is part of this whole legislation process.
It's more than just a part of it. It's a foundational concept that is fundamental wrong. They're telling you that they want to burn your property if they get the opportunity. And to have people understand that is crucial because everyone sits here with a peace in their heart when they buy their property. Now, let's say a lightning strike happens 10 feet from your property line, okay, on your side. Now you're responsible. Now you're financially responsible. All of these things. But yet they can have a fire and they'll burn right through your property without any problem. This is wrong. A whole thing.
All right. Now, since I'm out, okay, let me let Herman respond to that, Ed. Ed, you know, Ed's right about this, that this is essentially, it does nothing about the federal and state lands, right? What could be done about that?
Well, it does something with the state lands. It does nothing for federal land. So even a fire that starts on federal land and they decide to manage it instead of suppress it and a thing comes roaring out of the federal lands, this map does nothing. I asked that question. I asked the question at the meeting, and the guy from Oregon State University, he said this has nothing to do with federal land.
But it's not the majority of the problem that we're having with the federal land management here.
No. So it doesn't do nothing. And
like, no, but isn't that where most of the big fires come from that burn across our lands, from the feds?
Yeah, because here's the deal. That's because they're unpopulated. They're hard to get to, and also the policies of the federal government. You got to remember, fires that start on private land or along roads and stuff like that, they're recognized very early and they're suppressed. So most man-caused fires make up the majority of starts, but don't make up the majority of large fires. I think I said that pretty good. Yeah, because they're easily suppressed because of where they're located.
Okay, but how would you respond to that, Ed, what Herman was just added in? I'll give you another bite of that.
I look at it as educating the people so we can vote these idiots out of office, okay? And the reality to it is it all comes down to the Community Wildfire Protection Plan, which is done on a two-county basis, okay? Jackson and Josephine is the one for locally, and it's the amount of NGOs that are involved in setting up the court. What they try to do is substitute for the county in coordinating with both the federal and ODF. And when you sit back and you look at this idea or foundational concept that fire, no matter what the start is, be it on private land, be it a man-made start, be it whatever, if they classify it as an opportunity for management purposes, they'll want to burn it. Now, we had one locally up in our watershed. We lost the Butte fire over here that was burning earlier this summer, and they burned. Their precipitation was 4,000 some odd acres. I looked 3 weeks before it was over, and they had a projected end date. So they knew they could accomplish their burning requirements. Now, I look at this, and it's like everything is planned. When you go back and you study and read all of these plans, all of these strategies, everything, be it across guidelines. And remember what I said first. The idea is to burn across jurisdictions on a landscape scale, okay? So what they want to do is be able to have everything be considered in what they want to burn. Private land, federal land, county land, anything. Private ownerships are in there as the foundational payroll for it if they get where they have a start for some reason. And the question is, well, what is the start? How is the opportunity to burn for management? But the idea goes back to when they destroyed the logging industry. Well, they destroyed the logging industry. Now you have what Herman mentioned earlier, a fuel load. This is the thing the forest regenerates. We have a huge fuel load, and they don't manage it in any way, shape, or form. And then we end up with smoke in the valleys. We end up with long-term repercussions with respiratory disease, all of these things. And it has to be a message that people have to fight, because as a property owner, what do you have when you buy your property? You have an expectation of peace within the ownership of that property, not to have someone burn across your property line because some kid at college says, oh, this is part of our fire mapping for management. We have to burn this on a landscape scale. This is the most absurd thing I've ever seen or heard of.
All right. Ed, I appreciate your call. Thanks for making that. Any response to what he said there, though, Herman? I mean, I think he's right, you know, about
this. Yeah, if your property is in the way of a large fire, your property is in the way of a large fire. And if it's depending on how that fire is being driven, if it's a wind-driven fire, sorry, I just, you know, get what you can out of your house and get the hell out of there.
Yeah, but do we have a duty, though, to lay down and be subject to the land management of essentially Fed and other land managers as they burn into
currently, if you're an ODF-protected land, they're going to do whatever they can. And I will tell you, when I was in that business, I did some work for the Forest Service and I did some work for ODF and fire management both. But I will tell you, I used to enjoy working for ODF much more because they were so much more aggressive. But I will tell you, in those high level discussions, it got very heated, no pun intended, between ODF and the Forest Service because the ODF's dedication in protecting private lands. And we would say miles before, you know, if you guys don't get this figured out, we're going to take indirect action on Forest Service lands because we have a duty to protect ODF-protected lands. And they have done that historically. Mm-hmm. This new fire mapping may change that policy.
We will see about that. Thank you for your take on it, though, Commissioner Bearchigger, and we'll have you back on it, okay? Thank you.
Well, I'm not letting this one go, but I'm continuing to fight this because I know things are going to look a lot different in 10 years, and it's going to put a hell of a burden on anybody that lives in rural Oregon.
All right. Sorry to hear that, but probably pretty sound analysis on that. Commissioner Bearchigger from Josephine County, we'll have you back, all right? Be well.
Thanks.
All right. It's 11 minutes after 8. This is KMED, KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass. Why buy gold and silver right now, especially when we're in the everything rally? Although, I mean, the markets are a little softer today. Even gold dipped a couple of bucks below 2,500 for a change. Well, needless to say, we're in a debt super cycle of a debt super cycle bubble. I don't know how you want to call that, but eventually it's how much trust do you place in the Federal Reserve to be able to keep the plates spinning, to be able to preserve the value of the currency long term. And maybe for the most part, you're going to be fine. We're going to be able to muddle through and we're happy. But if we don't, then what? And that is what physical gold and silver, that is kind of boring, sits in your safe, and, you know, it's not generating returns or things like that. No, it's about preservation of capital, preservation of wealth. And the people you talk to about that, the recognized experts. And believe me, boring, safe, good right now, okay? Talk to Jay Austin and Company Gold and Silver Buyers. When I say boring, I'm talking about, you know, it's not like you're looking at the price of a stock going, oh my gosh, I'm rich. Oh my gosh, I got screwed. No, you're not getting that. We're talking about preservation of wealth, physical gold and silver. Take a portion of your portfolio, put it in there. Talk to your financial advisor, then talk to Jay Austin. Jay Austin and Company Gold and Silver Buyers, the recognized experts on these sort of issues. And doing really well by you, all right? 1632 Ashland Street in Ashland, 6th and G in downtown Grants Pass, corner of 6th and G, like I mentioned. Call 482-3715 for your appointment there. Other than that, just walk in the store or go to fortunereserve.com. Yeah, you can buy online with them, but believe me, you want to meet the recognized experts, Andrea, Mark, and the rest of the crew. Good people, and one of my oldest sponsors, Jay Austin in Ashland and Grants Pass.